So I think that everybody's affected by TriMet in one way or another. I got to speak to one of the head honchos at TriMet this week. His name is Bob Hastings. He's an agency architect at TriMet. He's worked there for 16 years as the agency architect and is the founder of Oregon by Design. He's not just about the destination, he's about the ride. Respect the ride. Ooh. So I caught up with Bob in his Northwest home. We talked about where TriMet's headed in the future, his legacy, and oh my goodness, we talked about renewable energy too. Oh, I need to catch my breath. He's a true visionary, as much as that word is overused, especially on LinkedIn. I mean, everybody's calling themselves a visionary these days. Come on. Okay, is everybody Steve Jobs? I don't think so. All right, enough snark. Let's meet our special guest today on pdxpodcast.com. It's Bob Hastings. The reason why I'm here today is because Mitsu Yamazaki said that you gave an amazing speech and talked about human infrastructure. Mm-hmm. The phrase, where does that come from? What was the context? What's it all about?
It's kind of an evolution of thinking and an idea, but also the experience of having been with TriMet as their agency architect. I've been at the agency for 16 years and worked on a variety of transit projects going all the way back into the 90s. And seeing how, as we are continuing to build and to design and to work in the city, we, I think, really have become to understand that we're helping to create the city, that it's not a conveyance for moving people. The more we do, the more we realize that we're moving community and we're shaping it, both the bricks and the mortar and the steel, but the awareness that we've been seeing is that we're also shaping how people are connecting with each other. So the idea of the human infrastructure is a parallel to what we say is a, you know, the sort of civil infrastructure. That folks...
That's such a great term. I love the term. It adds a bit of humanity to the steel and nuts and bolts of what makes a city run.
And that is the truth. Yeah. And that in Portland, you know, we're not a small city, but we're not also a big city. Sarah, in one of your interviews, you know, sort of made reference to the town scale of things, meaning that we have the ability to connect with folks on a very personal level. It could be giving tours to visitors from around the world, but also in the work that we do through TriMet, through our transit projects. You talk to citizens, you talk to neighbors, you talk to community activists. And I've been around other parts of the United States, and I've never seen this sort of level of positivity, of wanting to see how things can work, how they can fit together, but also the recognition that nobody can do it for you. We have to do it with each other, together. And in doing the work, you're also creating additional capacity for people. They're learning things. They're beginning to understand the network. What's the sort of the magic waters that we have in Portland? Why are we doing things here that resonate in other parts of the world?
Yeah.
So when I talked about the human infrastructure, it was that all folks in this discourse are learning and teaching and sharing, and that's that multiplier effect of ideas coming from all places, from the business leader, small shop owner, the teacher, the people who come to a community meeting because maybe they're afraid that there's something bad that's going to happen, and they really have some very strong concerns. Yeah. But it's this process, and it's very much about what design is about. Design is where you want to fail rapidly so you can learn and then apply that learning to the next idea that you try out.
Yeah. Failing quickly, I like that concept. I've definitely done that. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to expand a bit more on your contribution to Mr. Yamazaki's book, specifically the functions of the city that have been changed by public transit.
The initial idea, when I first got engaged with this back in the 90s, the architect was the one who was commissioned to create the vision, create the design, present it to the public, and they will like it. Well, that didn't work. We found that people either didn't understand, or maybe the way that we were communicating was not connecting their understanding and speaking in a way that really would make them appreciate what the issue was and then why the solution might have veracity. We finally got down to this recent project that just opened up in September 12th of 2015, the Orange Line.
Yeah.
And
big hit.
It was a big hit because, it wasn't that the outcome was the thing, it was the process that got us to the outcome, and it was this broad understanding by so many different sectors. Again, going back, you know, in 2010, there was real anger. There was deep-seated suspicions. Clackamas County, some folks were calling it the crime train that was going to be coming into the bucolic Milwaukee city. And there was a lot of, not just trepidation, there was anger. And it was based usually on a fear of change and in a way that people didn't feel connected and in control of that. So as I'm describing this scenario with the folks from Japan, you could tell that they're going, well, that sounds very similar to how we approach things. We are usually told, here's what the solution is, and you will like it. And when the tsunami hit and the Sendai earthquake, and it was a sort of both shock to the country, but also I think shock to their reliance on a hierarchical, non-inclusive, not engaging methodology.
Now, I do want to go back to the Orange Line. It's a hit. And what was your role in getting this done, getting this out there?
My role as agency architect for TriMet is to help with the sort of oversight of the design, the physical things that end up being built into the project.
Yes.
We had been advancing this idea of community engagement, and we had been advancing the idea that while there are elements of consistency in transit, there also have to be elements of distinction. And it's a distinction that helps clarify what is the neighborhood, who are they, what are their values, what do they need, what are the points of connection that are very important in both their daily lives, but also in living a civic life in Portland.
Right.
So we recognize that rather than being kind of engineering, this is going to have to be more like alchemy. And we hired an artist, Tad Savinar, brilliant thinker, and he created what became the Possibilities Project. And we looked all up and down the whole project from downtown Portland all the way to Park Avenue, 7.5 miles at the end. And we didn't dismiss anything that was plausible. We would look and say, well, the project, maybe it could do this, or maybe it connect in this way. Maybe it could anticipate what are going to be the changes in the demographics in the future.
Really, it took all that into consideration.
Yes.
For a transit line. Yeah, it's interesting to hear that.
And what resulted in that was TriMet as both an organization, but also the partners that we work with, the City of Portland, City of Milwaukee, the businesses, our community affairs folks, seeing that we had brought the sort of menu where you could choose what were the things that really were going to be impactful for that community and for that neighborhood in the final design process. For instance, at the Tacoma Park and Ride, it's a station. And yes, park and rides and parking structures are essentially daycare centers for cars. They are our babies. We love them. We want to nurture them. We want to put them in a very protective cocoon when we are away in the daily
right.
business.
Right.
But that single use of that land just for taking
right.
care of your precious, Chevy Camaro, is not really adding anything to the place.
Right.
So Tacoma Park and Ride became an opportunity to engage with the Johnson Creek Watershed Council in creating a restoration of the natural areas through there. Well, that would not have come about if we hadn't been open to hear, oh, there's this group that wants to do habitat restoration along Johnson Creek. Well, what would that mean? How would that look? There's folks who want to have stronger connections in the bicycle pathway and the Springwater Corridor. And we began to understand that these are stations that are not just connecting to downtown Portland. They're connecting in the other direction, too.
Yes.
And we dubbed that the Tacoma Park and Ride would become the gateway to adventure. Much less thinking like one of my favorite transit.
The gateway to adventure.
You could get off at the train. Right. You could ride your bike up the Springwater Corridor.
Right.
You could see the salmon migrating now up Johnson Creek. So the Possibilities Project crafted these strategies. Now, they were considered somewhat radical and somewhat dangerous because they were proposing things that there's no budget for this. Who's going to do that work? So we actually had to sort of keep the project under wraps until the Orange Line was open in September. And then I could sort of show people, well, here's where the magic came from.
Yeah.
We pulled the curtain back, and you could see the Wizard of Oz pulling the levers and doing the sort of amazing things. But that is the great thing about design thinking. It allows us to speculate on what could be. And then through that process, we begin to churn and select and judge and go back and forth. And then things can be much better than you'd ever hope for. Again, the Orange Line came in on schedule, well under budget. So this was not about risking losing control. It was actually about bringing people into the process, and that gave us more control because we were working with folks. There's no lawsuits. There was no folks with pitchforks and flaming sticks, maybe at the beginning in Clackamas County. But by the end of the project, there was such a high level of understanding and excitement. When it opened up, you know, people were like, this is like going on a ride at Disneyland, except this is my neighborhood, and I'm going to go to Milwaukee. I hear they got a great farmer's market. What we were doing was not to impress anybody in Rome, Paris, London, or Tokyo.
Right.
We were doing it for ourselves.
Right.
And when you recognize that it's for our community, so our community can become a better, more livable place, where opportunities for education and getting to your job, but also recreation and visiting friends, this becomes a kind of a magic sidewalk that moves up and down through the city that you can step on and off in so many different ways. And you get to see what the character and the texture of place. So that when folks visit us, they're kind of surprised that it's not more flamboyant. These are really kind of very tangible, very crafted things. You've put a lot of thought into that. We really can tell. But it's not grandiose. It's not, Las Vegas. It's not trying to be something other than authentic and opportunistic and hopeful. Wow, how did you do that? And that's when we blow their minds.
Yeah. How practical and pragmatic you are.
Now, I have to admit, I'm kind of a fanboy for the Tillicum Crossing, and I wanted to talk about that with Bob and throw a few compliments at him.
I love walking mm-hmm. over this thing. I love cycling over this thing and riding transit over. It's definitely a model of success, mm-hmm. and it's so scenic. That was a long process to get this started, and it seemed like a big grand opening, right? Mm-hmm. Was that fun?
Oh, the opening of the bridge.
Like, the job is a lot of fun.
Well, this one was, for all of us who had worked on it so long, it was our hearts were full when we saw the smiles on the faces of folks. And when so many different people, different types, different communities came out and it was their bridge.
Yeah.
It spoke to them. It had that magic, that immeasurable thing, and that's what we're trying to do. Louis Kahn, the architect, said that design is a process of moving from the immeasurable to the measurable. And that's what we're able to do. There's a lot to that story I could unpack.
Right. And was TriMet involved with Biketown at all, getting that started, or were you consulted? Did you have any kind of say-so in Biketown?
We, in the Possibilities Project, anticipated that there would be bike sharing. We've been hearing that it was being talked about. Well, where would it go? Where? What should it try and connect with? How would it engage with people? We did help with that speculation. We worked very closely with PBOT, but really it was the city of Portland's effort to sort of pull it all together. But again, it's part and parcel of what we do in Portland. No one entity can pull it off by themselves. We have to have help with each other. While Nike was the big funding sponsor that financially made it happen, PBOT, Portland Bureau of Transportation, was really the one that went all in and having the vision, but also having the kind of maturity to say it has to be an excellent execution of an excellent idea. We've learned that the hard way, too, because a bad execution of an excellent idea, well, that's a bad idea. So along the Orange Line, you'll see Biketown places, and they fit in precise places. There's niches that were set aside thinking, well, when that comes along, whenever it does, let's put it here by the OMSI station, or let's put this spot over here by the South Waterfront or Clinton Station. So we are anticipating that, again, this would be part of that multimodal ways that Portlanders can self-select through, smartphone apps and other things. Wow. What's going to work for them that day, that hour, that minute? Weather conditions, what are they carrying? Is it big and heavy or is it light? So not every response has to be, I'll jump in my car and go to the market.
And that brings me to this idea of 20-minute communities. I know Sam Adams was very big on this concept, and I love it.
The concept is that you can reach all the things in your daily lives that you need to have within a 20-minute walk. That's the kind of metric of it. What it really means is by having a 20-minute walk, what you've also created is a community that is connected, meaning the businesses have customers coming to them, the schools have students getting safely to them. You can go to for recreation, go for entertainment. You can almost do it in a seamless fashion. We as a community are not the same size, age, ability with health. There's so many different ways that we have to connect across our communities. You mentioned about the Tillicum Crossing. The slope of that bridge is intentionally made so that it is below the grade for American Disabilities Act, meaning that in a wheelchair you can go across that bridge. Well, we did that because it's a sense of equity that everybody should have the ability to make that connection no matter what difficulty they have to overcome. I love to see in the 20-minute connecting community, it's folks on a bicycle, it's somebody with a stroller, it's somebody pulling a wagon, you're on a bike. You could, there's the one-wheeled wheelie thing that goes zipping across.
The Unipiper.
Yeah, the Unipiper. So it's the theater of our community and a daily life presented to us, and sometimes it can be scary and awkward, but it's also the smiles that you see.
Yeah. There's a lot of smiles on that bridge, let me tell you. You see it.
Well,
you feel it.
We brought together in the process an architect, Donald MacDonald, and bridge engineer Simone Traeger with HNTB, but also Anna Valentina Murch and Douglas Hollis, artists. They were all brought together to collaborate on what was going to be the successful outcome. We put them in what we call a relationship where I can't win if you lose. We all have to have this win-win. And Anna and Doug, as artists, are hearing the discussions about the engineering and everything.
Well, that's a very inviting comment to make right there. It makes you feel like you're going to have your input. You're going to have your say as an artist. That's coming from someone like you. That means a lot to people.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's but again, we've had to sort of learn this through trial and error and making those mistakes and then trying to shorten the cycle between, darn it, that didn't work, too. Okay, that didn't work. Now what are we going to do? Yeah. For instance, Anna and Doug were wanting to have a lighting scheme on the bridge that would reveal the river that you were crossing and whatever mode it was. All right, how do you do that? And initially they thought that they're going to have a bobber in the river that would go up and down. Well, that mechanically was going to be very difficult. The aha moment was we found that the U.S. Geologic Survey has a monitoring station on the Morrison Bridge just downriver. And it constantly is feeding data about the flow, the speed, the temperature, the height of the river, and it's even the tidal influence. They took all that data, and that is what's streaming into the lighting controls for the bridge lighting every night. Beautiful idea of the river really having this poetic conversation through lighting, but revealing the beauty of the structure of the engineering and the architecture.
You are responsible for those solar panel, the solar panel structure by PSU, and that's right by my house, where I live. Ah. And can you explain the thinking behind that and renewable energy, your stance, and where that's going?
That was a great idea that came from Henneberry Eddy Architects. And we asked them, at this part of the project, we have to have the buildings and the components and the engineering that helps run the train, provide the power, the substation, the signals and communications. And those are very utilitarian buildings. Well, to put that in downtown Portland at the sort of, one could argue, a gateway into downtown, that's not going to work. What elegant wrapper could we put around these little gray turds? And that became the elegant wrapper, because as they thought about energy and powering the train, they asked the question, well, where does that energy come from? Yeah. Well, most people don't think about that. You flip on a switch, you go, oh, okay. You get the bill, and you go, oh, all right. Maybe you signed up for the wind energy. So the idea is telling a story, the power of a narrative. Here is electricity that's being generated on this site in downtown Portland in this sort of sweeping sculpture. It's more of an urban design gateway treatment than it is something that's really about the functional aspects. But that took somebody thinking along different lines, and artist Bill Wilb as being part of their design thinking. It was such a engaging idea that when we pitched it to TriMet leadership, the only question they really had was, can you pull that off? Can you make that happen? Yeah. And thanks to good funding from the Energy Trust of Oregon and PGE, as well as our project partners, we were able to build that. And it now provides 100% electricity that's used at the what we call the South Terminus. And it'll continue to function. It's very benign. Doesn't hurt anything. It's actually just very simple system to take care of.
Oh, that's good to hear.
So based on that, we're looking at, well, what other ways can we bring renewable energy on site where people can see it, not in some sort of way distant esoteric thing. On the Orange Line, if you take a look at the shelters at the stations, you will see in the roof bifacial solar panels. The glazing of the roof is actually solar panels. And that's something that's never been done on a transit project. And again, 100% of electricity we're using at the station is being powered by those solar panels.
Yeah, just screams progressive and Portland in so many ways. Okay, so I would like to ask you, as you're the lead architect at TriMet. Mm-hmm. Where do you see TriMet going in the future? What is the big scale, big vision, big idea? This is your Apple Steve Jobs moment right now.
Thank you. What a great question. And the short answer is I can tell you about the projects that are in the pipeline that we're beginning the design and engineering process, which will take years to go through. But the big question you're asking is, what is the future of the city and the region? 40 years ago, back in the 60s, Portland had some of the most fetid air it had the most, some of the most polluted rivers. We had taken paradise and we had shit all over it. And we've been trying to turn that wheel back since then. And TriMet was created to be part of that response of cleaning up our air and giving, you know, cleaner alternatives to vehicular traffic. As we're seeing some of now the tangible outcomes of that thinking that happened back in the 70s of creating 20-minute connected communities and using transit to help shape our downtown and provide economic development. But what is the future going to look like in terms of urban form and in people coming together? So my legacy will be for, I think, TriMet, this idea of the human infrastructure, that by having our discussions with people, that the ideas that will be shared are going to be coming from, you know, my millennial children. They'll be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
So
we're
even now at TriMet looking to our kind of next generation of leaders coming up and asking how TriMet can become the city itself, meaning we can become the laboratory of the thinking and then the execution of that. We have a good track record of being successful, but you're only as good as your next project in our world.
Yeah.
And Earl Blumenauer, congressman on the east side, Multnomah County, kind of threw down the gauntlet last summer when he said, you know, we have been fulfilling the legacy that was the guidebook was given to us 40 years ago. What's the next 40 years going to look like? Really, what's the way that the city is going to be shaping our communities, our lives, our businesses? And they're in ways that we don't even know. There's technologies that haven't even been invented yet.
Yeah.
But I think we as a community, as a society here, recognize that it's by the nurturing of the place that we live in and taking care of that which has been bequeathed to us, we got to do a better job. There's global issues that we have to respond to, and they can happen literally as you're walking along the sidewalk. The things that we need to change to better our world and to make an environment that the seventh generation can live in,
right,
we're the ones that have to start sort of making those gestures and ideas coming forward today. But continue to engage and continue to look for those opportunities for intersections.
So it's conversations.
Yes.
Essentially, it's conversations. Oh, I love that. I love that concept. And that is a legacy that will continue for many, 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 many years into Portland's future. Now, I do want to talk about your baby, Oregon by Design, which is a fellowship.
Evolution of my thinking and seeing how design is a process, working with folks in the community to create a stronger response that's more efficient. It meets budget, it meets schedule, it meets all those kind of hard-nosed, hardliner things that you're supposed to do in a project. But it also had the power to do something magical. And Oregon Community Foundation has a small fund within it. It's actually not so small. But they made it available for design professionals to apply for a fellowship and, if selected, receive the funding to use for a year. When I pitched the idea about the whole state of Oregon, Oregon by Design, where design thinking and problem solving could be used no matter where you were in Oregon, from Astoria to Ashland, from Brookings to Baker City, there were issues that were very important at that community level, and design as a process could be used to identify what were going to be the plausible ideas. Well, the Architecture Foundation, who was the sponsor for this fellowship, came back. They said, that's too big of an idea for what this fellowship is about. This is supposed to help fund you to go doing maybe some research in another country and some travel and drawing and stuff like that. He said, you're trying to create a whole cloth program for Oregon. We're really interested.
Yeah.
Oh, well, show us what this whole thing would look like. And so I had to kind of play out a whole three-year process. And in the end, they said, boom, here's a special grant. Go with funding, Go With God, and we really want you to sort of develop what this is about. In the application, I wanted to see what was going on throughout the rest of the world, throughout the rest of the United States, that might be something akin to what I was thinking about. So I've done research both within the state of Oregon, visited a number of communities and a number of organizations, and found that there actually are some things that people are doing, but the network between them is there's no network, there's no connecting. But when I went around the world, literally, first to Helsinki, Finland, very strong connection between design as both a process but also as an outcome, the object. Stockholm, Sweden, and there met with an organization that is for the whole country of Sweden. And the aha moment for them was when they realized that designing is a convening process. You bring people together to look at issues and well as and challenges as well as opportunities.
All right, so I understand you were the urban planner architect at ZGF, one of the managers at Portland Transit Mall. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you about that.
I was lucky enough to work at ZGF Architects in the 80s and 90s. When I came to TriMet in 2000, we knew that the Transit Mall had achieved a lot of successes, but we were also seeing that it was losing, you know, its viability. And through the process of the design of the mall, and ZGF as the firm came along again, and Greg Baldwin in particular, a huge shout out. His spirit is in the new mall that was recreated in 2009, and he was the one who really challenged us the idea of the contingent relationships that. The city and the room that we create along the mall is a shared experience by everybody. And that the transit system, the shelters, really had, they needed to become more transparent. They needed to reveal what was happening around that streetscape, that the city of Portland was growing up and that new architecture, new development was happening. So rather than having to create, again, this object of transit, we created the room of common agreement, which became the mall, and the crafting of it, the materials of it, the fact that the pedestrian is the most important person that's moving on the along that the mall street, and that we could have every mode of transit safely and effectively working in downtown. Nobody has done that. I mean, there's nobody in the world that we could go to and say, oh, you figured this out. We want to copy you. We were told the opposite. If you do light rail, bus, cars, bicycle, pedestrians, it's like that line from Ghostbusters, dogs, cats, living together, mass hysteria. but we accepted that challenge and said, everybody has to win, so we need to have people engaged. And this was that pivotal point of engagement with the community and leaders being part of that design process. And the fact that you have now this beautiful, well-crafted furniture in the downtown mall was through that process of design. But most importantly, and one of the things that I think Mitsu was really surprised about and why it was so important for the folks of Japan to hear, it's a constant caring and feeding of something that we all share in the public realm. And no one entity can do that by themselves. So the human infrastructure, a direct human infrastructure that is a realization of that project, it's called Portland Mall Management, Inc. And they help take care of the picking up things, cleaning off things, having people out there to answer questions with from neighbors and visitors. We all put our funding into this common pot to make sure that the mall into the future in perpetuity will be taken care of and managed. That was not something that we knew we were going to create going into the process. That was, again, something that was revealed as we were recognizing our own limitations if we were acting as individuals, and the power of coming together in the collective we, yes, of what we're going to do.
The Design Skills Symposium in Glasgow, can you tell me more about that? What does it mean for Portland?
What it means for Portland and Oregon is that there'll be a way for community engagement to move outside of just the sort of the Portland bubble. You know, we sort of live in this. Sometimes it's an echo chamber where we reinforce each other's good and bad habits. But across the rest of the state of Oregon, the most beautiful place in the United States, in my opinion, our communities still have that place that they are really connected to. And the symposium, again, will bring together folks, will again reinforce the idea of the human infrastructure for identifying opportunities as well as challenges, but working together in this design process and being not just saying, oh, we need to remodel that school, or, oh, there needs to be a better bridge here to connect that bicycle or pedestrian path. But it's this, hey, you know, Sally, you helped on that process, and Juanita, you were part of that too. And, boy, I didn't recognize that there's so much diversity in our community, and we came together and we figured out ways to solve problems. I want to continue to do this. Oh, and I just got a phone call from somebody in Astoria. They heard what we are doing over here in Redmond. Maybe we can help them with that process. So it's creating this network of relationships throughout the whole state where, again, that message that I found here in Portland, that a rising tide will float all ships and that we have to learn from each other. We can't copy, we can't mimic. I believe that it's important, as Pablo Picasso said, if you find something that's valuable, you don't borrow the idea, you steal it. Yes, I'm stealing from Glasgow, from Architecture Plus Design Scotland, and I'm going to help lead a Design Skills Symposium through Oregon by Design in collaboration with the Architecture Foundation of Oregon and hopefully some other great partners, quite possibly a Portland State University and their Center for Public Policy, perhaps the Oregon Business Council that's already doing great things across the state. At some point, I'll leave the bus company, and hopefully with a good foundation under its feet, and then take the canoe that I'm building with Oregon by Design and paddle off to other places throughout the state.
That's the future, paddling on a canoe for you?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Maybe it'll be as beautiful as the George Pocock wooden boat that we saw as we were coming into Atwater Place here.
Fantastic. I do want to thank you so much for your time. Can I call you Bob?
Please.
Okay. Bob Hastings, you were a pleasure. I learned so much. Very inspirational. You are a guru. You are a guru.
And thank you for doing this wonderful blog. It's so exciting to hear the work of others,
too. It's a podcast that's sort of a blog. I guess you could say it's an audio blog. It's an audio blog. Audio. No, you're not the first person to say that.
Well, I'm a blogger many times.
Well, I think you're also an alchemist in bringing together all sorts of ingredients. We don't know what the jewels are, the valuable things that will come out of this, but it is by the discussions, the conversation. That's how we build community.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you again, Bob. This is fantastic, really.
Thank you so much.
This was so wonderful to connect.
And thank you for listening. And please remember to vote. I'm Gregory Day. This is pdxpodcast.com. We'll see you next Monday.